All right, welcome everyone to this week's Quantum Matter seminar. So we have Yin Chen for us this week. So Yin Chen got his PhD from Fudan 2014, I believe.
Yeah.
And then he did his postdoc in Max Planck and then Harvard. And he's been at Perimeter since 2018. And he'll tell us some of his recent works about bootstrapping quantum criticalities. Yin Chen, it's yours.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for the introduction, and also thanks for having me to give a talk. So this talk will be mainly based on several papers that I wrote down since the pandemic with these two great friends who are bootstrap experts, Junchen Rong and Yin Su. I will also briefly talk about a work about this so-called stable liquid. It's a collaboration in TI with Liu Junzhou, who is a talented postdoc, and Chong, who is chairing this seminar. Okay, so this is the outline of this talk. I will first give some introductions and talk about the critical quantum matter in general. So let me just start with a brief introduction about quantum matter. That I guess everyone knows that a large class of quantum matter will be this so-called spontaneous symmetry breaking phases and their associated phase transitions. For example, we can have superconductors, ferromagnets, and these physics are described by quantum field theories like Phi-4 theory that you can find in textbook. In recent several decades, very interesting type of physics was studied, and this is called topological physics. And the standard example are the like fractional quantum Hall state and topological insulators. And those phases are described by topological quantum field theories like transimon theories. While in this talk, what I'm going to talk about is another type of quantum matter that we can call it the critical quantum matter. For example, we can have the so-called critical phases. One type of this critical phases, we can call it conformal phases, that is described by conformal field theories. And we can also have the so-called metallic phases, including like fermi-liquid, non-fermi-liquid, and strange matter. So the difference between, one difference between those two is that the former has Lorentz symmetry, while the latter does not have Lorentz symmetry. And in this talk, what I'm really going to talk about are those conformal phases or conformal critical point. And I will just simply call them as critical phases or critical point. Okay, compare those two, first the two types of quantum matter, the critical phases are rather poorly understood. Among the very few understood type of critical phases is this spin 1/2 Heisenberg chain, that we just have a chain of quantum spin 1/2 interacting with its neighbors through this anti-ferromagnetic Heisenberg interaction. So this model is exact solvable, for example, using this so-called beta ansatz. And you can find that the ground state of this Hamiltonian is described by a conformal field series in 1 plus 1D called SU2 level 1 Westrom-Norwitten theory. So this turns out to be an example of 1 plus 1D critical phase, or you can call it critical spin liquid. And there are several material to realize it. And there was beautiful experiments using neutron scattering, find very nice spectral function that agrees with the theoretical calculation. There are various ways to understand this critical phase. And one way is using effective field series. For example, we can write down a Westrum Norwitten model that is a non-linear sigma model supplemented with a Westrum Norwitten term. So this this model, the non-linear sigma field will be a four-component unit vector that called N here. And physically, it's pretty straightforward to understand this non-linear sigma field, that the first three component are just the three components of our spin, while the last component correspond to this valence bound solid that has two neighboring spin forms singlet. And it is known that for this model, it is integrable model, and we know that as you crank on the coupling constant, this theory well flows to a non-trivial fixed point that is described by this so-called SU2 level K Westrum Norwitten theory. So for the spin one half Heisenberg chain, we just take this integer valued K to be one. Okay, so those are well understood textbook examples. And here I want to emphasize that the Westrum Norwitten term is crucial as it modifies the RG flow. For example, if you don't have this Westrum Norwitten term, this theory will just flow from the Gaussian to a trivial disordered fixed point that is gapped. While if you have a Westrum Norwitten term, at the end of the day, you will flow to this conformal fixed point that I just described before. And the other thing is that physically, it's pretty easy to understand the meaning of this Westrum Norwitten term. It just tells us about this so-called intertwinement of the spin ordering, that is the first three components of this N field and the valence bound order. More concretely, what you can do is that you can just create a domain wall, as drawn here, of the valence bound solid, and in the center of this domain wall, you will find a spin moment trapped in. That's just a physical interpretation of the Westrum Norwitten term. And this Westrum Norwitten term is related with the topological properties of the manifold this N field lives in. So remember that it's just a four component unit vector. So it lives on this three sphere, and the Westrum Norwitten term correspond to a non-trivial pi three equals to Z and trivial pi two. Okay, this is all about this Westrum Norwitten models in one plus one D. So very often that you will say that in condensed matter systems, we will usually have critical point in either quantum or classical system. So, and sometimes we can have this critical phases, just like this spin one half Heisenberg chain. So the difference between the critical phase and the critical point is nothing but that the critical phase correspond to an attractive RG fixed point in the RG space, while the critical point correspond to a repulsive RG fixed point. For example, there will be one repulsive RG direction in the RG space for a critical point. And for the SU2 level K Westrum Norwitten CFT I talked about, it turns out that the SU2 level one can appear as a critical phase in half integer spin, while the SU2 level two Westrum Norwitten can only appear as a critical point in integer spin. And this can be understood by analyze the properties of the CFT as well as the properties of our microscopic system that is spin chain. So here I will just briefly go through the analysis. So for this SU2 level K Westrum Norwitten CFT, its IR symmetry is the SO4. So, but for the spin chain, the UV symmetry of the system will be just a spin rotation that is SO3 times lattice symmetry, such as the translation symmetry. So now what we can ask is, how is the lattice symmetry acts on the those microscopic how lattice symmetry acts on our IR operators. For example, the simplest operator you can consider is the SO4 vector, just the nonlinear sigma field that I talked about. And it turns out, as I said, the first three component will be just the three spin SO3 component, while the last component is a singlet under the SO3, but it is odd under this translation symmetry.
Yinchen, I think there is a question raised from the audience.
Hi, this is Ilya Grusberg. So I just wanted to understand the conventional point of view, as far as I'm familiar with, is that in SU2 model, I mean, just spin 1/2, the dimerization is a symmetry breaking perturbation that actually is relevant and certainly takes you away from the critical point. This is why it's usually called a critical point instead of critical phase. In SU2 level 1 describes the critical point. And then higher SU2 level keys are multi-critical because you have to tune more than one relevant perturbation to get there, right? So why is it different from what you're describing here? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure what do you mean by the dimerization.
It means that you make the strengths of the.
So if you have translation symmetry, then it is irrelevant, right? All you are talking about. Yeah, maybe let me finish this slide then.
Let's just agree on this. Suppose you take your spin 1/2 chain and make every other pair of every other bond stronger than the next one, right?
Yeah, so just that breaks the translation symmetry in the UV.
Of course, but it doesn't break SU2, right? So,
here to have a critical phase, what you need is both the spin rotation and the translation symmetry. Then you are not allowed to add the perturbation you described. So that makes it a
phase. So you're insisting on having the full lattice translation. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. That's crucial. That's crucial.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
So here you can say that in order to forbid this SO4 vector, we need this translation symmetry because this fourth component is a singlet on the SO3, but it is odd on the translation. So we can continue to go to higher operators like the symmetric rank 2 tensor. And there you can just through a simple analysis, you can find that indeed there's an operator that is both that is singlet under both the SO3 rotate. Spin rotation as well as the translation. So that means this operator will be allowed if you keep the entire symmetry of the system. And for SU2 level 1, you will find that this operator is marginal, while for SU2 level 2, you will find that this operator is irrelevant. That means for SU2 level 1, as long as you keep this UV symmetry, you will have it realize a critical phase, while for SU2 level 2, you have to fine tune this operator to zero in order to hit this CFT. That's why it's a critical point for SU2 level 1, level 2. Okay, so I just explained about this 1 plus 1, the critical phase described by SU2 level 1, Wessel-Norwitten theory. And so physically, you can understand it as the intertwinement between the spin ordering, although the spin does not really order in 1 plus 1D. But intuitively, you can say it's spin ordering and the valence bond ordering. So now we can move to more interesting situation, that is 2 plus 1D. And in 2 plus 1D, we indeed will get a variety of symmetry breaking orders. For example, even for magnetic order, we can have different type of patterns like this collinear magnetic order, as well as the non-collinear magnetic order that has been ordering in different directions, but in the same plane. we can also have this non-coplanar magnetic order. And on the other hand, for valence bound solid, we can also have various different types of valence bound solid. So now a question that you can ask is, what can we also have something similar as this 1+1D story that we can try to intertwine different symmetry breaking order? Can we get some interesting criticality out of it? Okay, and the answer is yes. And one of the most well-known example is this so-called deconfined visualizations. So which intertwines can be understood as a critical point from intertwining this nail state with this valence bound solid. So from the perspective of field theory, it's very similar as SU to level one, Wedgwood-Witten theory, that the difference is that since we are in 2+1D, so in order to have a non-trivial Wedgwood-Witten term, what you need to do is that to increase the number of to make your this N field to live in S4 rather than S3. So that means you need a 5-component vectors. So then you can write down a nonlinear sigma model. And it turns out that by tuning the anisotropy, you can realize these two different symmetry breaking phases, while and their transitions will be described by this deconfined visualizations. And physically, so, yeah.
Yinchen, another question from the audience.
Yeah. I guess you can just directly interrupt me rather
than
raise
your hand. Yeah.
Hi, Yinchen, Michelle from the University of Waterloo. I'm wondering in the cuprates and in frustrated magnetism over the last few years, there's been lots of discussions about intertwined order. And I think there's an attempt to define that very precisely in terms of composite order. So I'm wondering, when you use the word intertwine here, are you using the wording casually, or do you have an operational definition of what you mean by intertwining?
Yeah, that's a good question. So indeed, it's just what's drawn here. Yeah. So by intertwinement here, what we mean is that the domain wall of one order parameter will trap the order parameter of the other order. Just like here, if you draw a domain wall of valence bound solid, you will find that on the center of this domain wall, you will have spin 1/2 trapped in. And physically, that comes from nothing but this Wedgwood-Witten term. It's just a pictorial interpretation of this topological Wedgwood-Witten term. And that's what we mean by intertwinement precisely here.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. Okay, so this is the deconfined visualizations. So now, as I said, in 2+1D, indeed, we have many different types of symmetry breaking orders. So now it's natural to ask, can we also have something similar for other symmetry breaking orders? And so, and it turns out that, yes, we can. But we need to consider a slightly more formal manifold rather than just a sphere. So this manifold is called a Stifel manifold. So formally, you can write it as this so-called SON quotient SON minus K. And it's really easy to visualize it. It's nothing but N times K real matrices satisfying these orthogonal conditions. In other words, it's just a K mutual orthogonal N component unit vector. So for the sphere, it's just a one n-component unit vector. And a non-trivial example will be, let's say, SO6, quotient SO4. And this will be just a two orthogonal six-component unit vectors, N1 and N2. Okay, so And for this simple manifold, Sphere is a special example. And this spin one half Heisenberg chain in 1 plus 1D, as well as this deconfined differentiation in 2 plus 1D, are just two special examples of this Western Willow-Witton models on the Stiefel manifold. And it turns out that in 2 plus 1D, you can, for any Stiefel manifold, SON, quotient SO4, you can always write down a Western Willow-Witton terms due to this non-trivial homotopy. And for the deconfined differentiation, just a simple case that you take N equals to 5. So based on this non-trivial structure and the knowledge about N equals 5, we conjecture that for this Western Willow-Witton models, you will have some RG diagram like this. So if the coupling constant of the nonlinear signal model is small, you will naturally have an ordered phase that spontaneously breaks the symmetry. But if you crank on the coupling constant, the system will eventually flow to a disordered fixed point. And we conjecture that this disordered fixed point will be a non-trivial conformal fixed point. And we call this as the so-called as stable liquid. Okay, so and now a question that you may ask is, what are the examples of those stable liquid for n other than 5? So it turns out that for n equal to 6, this stable liquid will correspond to a quantum critical state from intertwinement of this non-collinear magnetic order with the valence bound solid. And even more interestingly, this state is indeed the widely studied spin liquid phase called Dirac spin liquid phase. So historically, the way that people study this Dirac spin liquid is to write down a gauge theory that has four flavors of Dirac fermions interacting with a U1 gauge field in 2 plus 1 dimensions. And what's important for this theory, the one very important operator for this gauge theory is a monopole operator of the U1 gauge field. And this monopole is a bivector of the SO6 times SO2. So that means you can just write down a two unit vectors, six component unit vectors to represent the monopole. Recall that this, and that means actually this monopole just lives on the Stiefel manifold SO6 quotient SO4. Oh, sorry, quotient SO4. And further, from the gauge theory side, we can understand that if you just condense the monopoles, you can either get the magnetic order, non-collinear magnetic order, or the valence bound solid. And this agrees nicely with our expectation for the N equals to 6 stable liquid. And we can further indeed derive the nonlinear sigma models, the Western Willow-Witton models from this gauge theory. And from this, we reach the conclusion that for N equal to 6, this stable liquid is nothing but this extensively studied Dirac spin liquid. We can further go to the list with a higher N. Let me also mention that indeed, this Dirac spin liquid is likely to be realized in a number of theoretical models, like this famous Heisenberg spin one half antiferromagnetic model, as well as a triangular J1, J2 model. And there are several materials like Herbert Smithite and also some new materials that might realize this Dirac spin liquid as a ground state. Okay, so now we can further go to a higher end to ask what do they correspond physically. And what we found is that if we choose N equal to 7 and K equals to 1, we can again get some interesting quantum critical state that physically correspond to the intertwinement between the non-coplanar magnetic order with the valence bound solid. recall that for n equals to 5, it is a critical state from the interalignment between this non-collinear magnetic order with the valence of a solid, while for n equal to 6, it is this non-collinear magnetic order with the valence of a solid. Okay, so this rather unified picture gives us more faith that maybe this new stable liquid exists in nature. Okay, but it remains an important question for us to really understand the properties of this stable liquid. So, as I said, the general RG diagram is that here I will get a non-trivial conformal fixed point correspond to stable liquid. And we based on several evidences, we conjecture that for n larger than 6, this conformal fixed point does not have any renormalizable Lagrangian description. In other words, it will be a non-Lagrangian. That means the conventional method to study this stable liquid, it may not be available. So like perturbation calculations or some lattice simulations of Lagrangian will not be available to study this newly proposed stable liquid. So it's really important question to ask whether this guy really exists in nature.
Yeah. Sorry, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to understand what you mean by non-Lagrangian. I mean, for example, we have examples of quantum criticality in two dimensions that are described by things like, you know, sigma models with topological theta terms. And yeah, those models float a strong coupling, you know, in the case of magnets to, you know, some Wessamino theory like SU2 at level 1. But yeah, I mean, you have a Lagrangian in the ultraviolet, which is perfectly well defined. It just doesn't capture, I mean, presumably if you did large-scale numerics on that Lagrangian with the topological term, you would find the same critical point. So what do you mean by non-Lagrangian?
The Lagrangian you described is a renormalizable Lagrangian, meaning that let me go to here, right? So it's basically similar as what you described, right? So here the Gaussian fixed point is repulsive. So then here you just crank on infinitesimal perturbations, then you flow to the IR fixed point. So such Lagrangian will be randomizable, right? Because it's triggered by a relevant perturbation. But as you know, for nonlinear sigma models in dimension higher than 1 plus 1 D, this Gaussian fixed point is stable. That means to access this fixed point, you need order one perturbation. That makes this model non-randomizable.
But that's a generic statement just about sigma models in more than 2 D.
Yeah. And in 2 plus 1 D, we know a number of theories. Just like Wilson Fisher, right? You can describe it with nonlinear sigma models without a topological term, right? And there, in the framework of nonlinear sigma model, it is a non-randomizable, but you can write down a randomizable theory like FIFO theory, right? And here is similar for n equals to 5 and n equals to 6. It turns out that this model has a UV completion by writing down a gauge theory. But we conjecture it's unlikely to be the case for n larger than 6. That means
so in the Wilson Fisher fixed point, though, this has a very specific meaning, which is that there's an upper critical dimension and you can do an epsilon expansion below it. So are you claiming something that there isn't an upper critical dimension, or is it less exotic? You just don't know what there could be some Lagrangian, some local description in terms of some degrees of freedom. You just don't know how to write it down.
Yeah,
those are two different things.
Yeah. Because in 2 plus 1 D, the only known randomizable Lagrangians will involve like soft core bosons, fermions, and gauge field. Yeah, and we think all such description won't fit in this stiffer liquid. Okay, there could be some other case.
You're not claiming that the upper critical dimension is infinite or something like this?
No.
We're okay. Not claiming that. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so it's important for us to show that this guy really exists for n larger than 6. On the other hand, we also want to ask in microscopic systems, in condensed matter systems, whether this stable liquid could appear as a critical point or critical phase. And that's very similar as the example of this SU2 level K Western Minowitan series, that what we need to consider is that the IR symmetry of this fixed point will be very large, like SON times SON minus 4, but the UV symmetry will be just like SO3 as well as some lattice symmetry. So we need to consider perturbations that perturb this IR symmetry down to the UV symmetry. Then we should ask whether those perturbations are relevant or irrelevant at this stable liquid fixed point. So if T is relevant, then we have to fine tune this perturbation to 0 in order to hit this fixed point. That means it will appear as a critical point. And this turns out to be the case for n equals to 5. And for n equal to 6, there are several evidences, mostly numerical evidence by simulating the gauge series. And it is likely that those perturbations will be irrelevant. And if this is true, then we will have a critical phase if you keep all the lattice symmetry as well as the spin rotation symmetry. So, it requires some more rigorous method and serious study to understand the fate of those stable liquid those microscopic systems. Okay, and this is why so one approach to answer those two questions is to use a method called conformal bootstrap. So now let me switch the gear to this conformal bootstrap. I will try to give you a very light review about conformal bootstrap. So as you know, for critical point, for the critical systems with Rollin's symmetry, very often you will get a bonus that there will be emergent conformal symmetries, whose symmetry transformation looks like this. And the conformal symmetry turns out to be very powerful in constraining the IR theories. So for example, you can consider the correlation functions in the CFT. The two-point correlation function will just follow the Fermilian power law decaying form. And this delta is just a scaling dimension of that operator. And physically, it corresponds to critical exponents that we can measure experimentally or numerically. And the three-point correlation functions will also be highly constrained. It will be this funny form with the only undetermined factor, this lambda, and this lambda is called operator product expansion coefficient. And physically, it can be understood that by fusing two operators, you will get a summation of a third operator. And for each operator, you will get a coefficient, and it's nothing but this lambda. And this also gives you a way to calculate other properties like a four-point correlation functions. And the four-point correlation functions is not completely fixed by conformal symmetry, but you can calculate it with the OPE in previous slides. There are various ways to do this calculation. For example, you can fuse your operators in the S channel, draw in red, or you can fuse it in the T channel, draw in blue. So, and obviously those two different ways of calculation should give you identical results. And this will further constrain the properties of the theory, like we'll constrain the scaling dimensions and OP coefficient. So then the conformal bootstrap problem is just can be formulated as the following. You just find out a set of CFD data, like scaling dimensions and OP coefficients that solve this bootstrap equations. This idea was proposed several decades ago, but people realized that it is a super challenging problems because the roughly due to three infiniteness. Like first of all, you will actually deal with infinite number of such equations. And secondly, each equation will involve an infinite sum, that because you have infinite operators in your theory. And even for each term in the summation, it's so complicated. The term in the summation is called the conformal block, but it's in a general dimension, it's very complicated. For example, in 2 plus 1D, we don't know any closure form. That means we have to write it as like infinite series. So that really poses very serious challenging for us to follow this idea. And it has been for a while that people didn't work out anything useful from this bootstrap equation. Until roughly a decade ago, there was a very nice paper pointing out that even if we cannot solve this bootstrap equation, we can still get some useful information out of them by using some numerical technique. And more concretely, what you can do is that you can exclude certain regions that is not consistent with the bootstrap equations. So let me give you a very concrete example. For example, so you can ask, what are the possible space for CFT in 2 plus 1D with an SO5 symmetry? So here is a result from the conformal bootstrap. So this x-axis is a scaling dimension of the SO5 vector, while the y-axis is a scaling dimension of the SO5 singlet. So now you see there's a region in orange, and those are consistent with the bootstrap equation, but it doesn't mean that every single point inside this orange region will correspond to a CFT. But what we know for sure is that the region outside this allowed region will not be consistent with a unitary SO5 CFT. And from this one important information we can extract is that if the SO5 singlet is irrelevant, the scaling dimension of this SO5 vector should be larger than 0.77. And this turns out that to be inconsistent with the SO5 deconfined visualization that I introduced before, because numerically people typically get this eta is around 0.2 and 0.3. And that is suggesting that maybe the SO5 deconfined visualization is not a unitary CFT. Okay, so then we can simply play this game for other stifle liquid, like the Dirac spin liquid I talk about. So just remind you that the global symmetry of this Dirac spin liquid is SO6 times SO2, while the lattice symmetry is only SO3 times lattice symmetry. So then some operators that is non-trivial under the IR symmetry could be a singlet under my UV symmetry. For example, on triangle lattice, this an operator that I will call TS is symmetry allowed. So you don't need to worry too much about what is this operator precisely, but for expert, this just refers to an operator that is a rank two tensor, symmetric rank two tensor of SO6, and meanwhile, a singlet of this SO2. And in the language of the QED theory, this operator is a four fermion operator. And on the Kagome lattice for the Dirac spin liquid, It turns out that besides this TS, there will be another operator that I will call TT is symmetry allowed. And this operator in the gauge theory language will be a four-pi monopole operator. If we just use the naive larger scaling dimension, this two operator scaling dimension is around 2.5, which makes it possible that maybe they are irrelevant in the for the Dirac spin liquid. So now the question, a question we can ask is if the Dirac spin liquid is a stable critical phase, then we need to require those two operators to be irrelevant. And then we can ask what are the possible space for the Dirac spin liquid to live in. So here is the results we obtained from the conformal bootstrap. And the x-axis is the scaling dimension of the monopole. The y-axis is the scaling dimension of the fermion bilinear. That is the SUN adjoint, SO6 adjoint. And those two indeed can be some critical exponent, correspond to critical exponent that people can measure experimentally or numerically. And the shaded red region are the region that are consistent with the this bootstrap bounds. And what we find is that the Monte Carlo results are consistent with those bootstrap bounds, while this blue dot is a larger results, which is inconsistent with those bootstrap bounds. Okay, so those bootstrap bounds is one piece of information that we can get from the this numerical bootstrap. And of course, we hope to get much more information about those critical system. And that's actually why people are excited about conformal bootstrap, because it can not just give you, not only give you a bound, sometimes it can give you characteristic features about the CFT that you are interested in. One famous example is this Eisen CFT, that if you just ask what are the conformal bootstrap bounds of a CFT with a Z2 symmetry. So people, you can get some numerical bounds, just as what I showed in previous slides. And here, a very important feature you can easily observe is that on the numerical bounds, there is indeed a kink. And this kink turns out to be the Eisen CFT. And it's the case for both 2D and 3D systems. And moreover, people can do a more complicated bootstrap study, like to consider several correlators and get a number of bootstrap equations. By doing this, people find that those allowed region of the Eisen CFT can be further shrink to a very small island, as drawn here. And the error bar of this island turns out to be one digit smaller than the Monte Carlo error bar. And this really gives the world a record precise critical exponent of the 3D Eisen. So this is a story for the Eisen type or the Wilson Fischer type of CFTs. And we hope to extend such success to the quantum critical matter that I have talked about at the beginning of this talk. So now let's move to the last part about bootstrapping those some critical quantum matters. And I will first give you a toy example, just this Heisenberg spin 1/2 chain that is SU2 level 1 Western Witten CFT. And then I will talk about this SUN Dickenfeld efficientization. Okay, so it turns out that there is a challenge if you want to bootstrap those critical quantum matter we are interested in. So the challenge is as following. So very often, there exists a family of CFTs with identical global symmetry and similar operator spectrum. And just like the SU2 level K Western Norwegian CFT, you know that for any integer value to K, you will get a CFT, and their global symmetry are identical. But on the other hand, in a bootstrap study, what you usually do is just input the global symmetry and choose the operator to be bootstrapped. For example, for the Wilson-Fisher CFT, we know that the global symmetry is On, and you can consider the correlators of On vector, right? And it is known, it is believed that if you just specify these two informations, you will only get one CFT, that is Wilson-Fisher CFT. However, it's not the case for the critical quantum matter we are interested in. Just like the Westrom-Norwegian theories that for each integer value of K, you will get a CFT. You can also consider gauge theories that for sometimes for different gauge group, you will also get a CFT and their global symmetry are identical. So in other words, the gauge fields and the Westrom-Norwegian levels do not appear in the bootstrap equations. So that somehow makes people think that there is a tension between those CFTs and the fundamental philosophy of the bootstrap, that you just input to the global symmetries and so on. But what we find that it's actually not the case, and we can indeed make progress on bootstrapping those critical quantum matter that we are interested in. Let me just give you a toy example about this SU2 level K, SU2 level one, Westrom-Norwegian CFT. So remember that the global symmetry of this theory is SO4. So we can choose just to bootstrap the correlator of this SO4 vector. So this is a numerical bounds we get. And here you can see that there's a kink, and the kink is just correspond to the SU2 level one Westrom-Norwegian CFT. And the other SU2 level K series seems to saturate the numerical bound on the left-hand side of the SU2 level one. So, and we can further consider the mixed correlator, we find that we can further shrink the allowed region to be a small island with the SU2 level one sitting on the edge of this island. So this tells us that indeed we can bootstrap the SU2 level K, level one, Westrom-Norwegian CFT. And a more careful analysis tells us that indeed this is closely related to a very fundamental property about the 2D CFT that is called the null operator. So let me try to explain it. So recall that the global symmetry of this SU2 level K Westrom-Norwegian CFT is SO4. And now let's ask, what are the operator spectrum of this theory in each representations of my global symmetry? So for example, for this SO4 vector, the lowest operator will have this scaling dimension, and it is a Kac-Moody primary operator. And we can continue this game by asking what is the lowest operator for the SO4 rank 2 symmetric tensor. And if K is larger than 1, the lowest operator will have this scaling dimension, and it is a Kac-Moody primary operator. But we know that when K equals to 1, this Kac-Moody primary operator indeed becomes a null operator. That means for K equals to 1, the lowest operator will be some Kac-Moody descendant that has scaling dimension 2. So now we can just plot this results, and you can find that at SU2 level 1, you will have a sudden jump because the Kazemudi primary operator just becomes a null operator. This is a numerical result we have obtained here. So this tells us that the fact that the SU2 level one appears as a kink is nothing but that here we get a null operator decoupled from our spectrum. So we can call this as some operator decoupling mechanism, a phenomenon, and we can call this as a decoupling operator. And one interesting aspect is that it turns out that this operator decoupling phenomenon of the Western-Minowitan theory can be simply understood by rewriting this theory as a gauge theory. So, and the key is to realize that you can write down a UK gauge theory in 1 plus 1D that has two flavors of Dirac fermions interacting with a UK gauge field. And though this theory is just due to the SU2 level K Western-Minowitan. And then you can ask what are the operators in the gauge theory that correspond to the operators of the Western-Minowitan safety. And for this Kazemudi null operator, the gauge theory operators will be a four fermion operators that you symmetrize your flavor in indices and anti-symmetrize your color indices. So for k larger than one, you can always do this, but when k equals one, that you have U1 gauge theory, so you don't have any color indices to anti-symmetrize. So that means this operator will just vanishes, and in the CFT language, we know that that's nothing but here this operator becomes a null operator, or we can call it decoupling operator. And similarly, for another operator, this Kazemudi descendant, this operator is again a four fermion operator, but it always exists no matter you have U1 gauge field or UK gauge field. Okay, so now we have a simple semi-classical interpretation of this Western-Minowitan null operators using gauge theory. And on the gauge theory side, we can easily generalize this to arbitrary dimensions. For example, we can consider n flavors of critical bosons coupled to a UNC gauge field and in 3D, in 2 plus 1D. So now we can consider operators in the representation that is have both upper index, SUN index, and down indices to be symmetrized, anti-symmetrized. Right. So the lowest operator will be a four boson operator, and to write it down, you have to anti-symmetrize your both your flavor indices as well as your color indices. So apparently you cannot do so if you just have U1 gauge field. And that makes that you have to add two derivatives to write down this operator. And this is indeed very similar to the Western-Minowitan CFTs that I talked about in the previous slide. So in other words, the lowest operator in this channel will be decoupled at nc equals to one. So, and this can also be further generalized to any gauge group by considering a higher rank representations of your global symmetry. So now you see that this structure is very similar to the null operator structures of the 1 plus 1D Western-Minowitan safety. And so now we can just use this to bootstrap scalar QED that is a number of bosons interacting with a U1 gauge field. And in condensed matter literature, there is extensive interest in this theory. For NF equals one, this theory corresponds to this so-called particle vortex duality. And when NF equals two, that is a deconfined phase transitions people I talk about. It's one of the due description of the deconfined phase transition. And for general NF, this theory describes this so-called SUN deconfined phase transitions that also has been studied before. So now we can just try to bootstrap this theory. For example, what we consider is a correlator of the SUN adjoint of SUN adjoint. And what's important here is the OPE of this SUN adjoint. And you don't need to read this. And what's important is the OPE of the two SUN adjoint will give us a number of operators in different representations. And the most important thing is that the decoupling operator will indeed appear in the OPE. So now what we can do is that let's just bound this decoupling operator using the numerical bootstrap. And this is what we have attempted. So what you can see is that there is a very sharp kink, which indeed is a sudden jump when NF is large. And this is what we expected, right? And this kink would, at NF equals to infinity, this kink will just coincide with what we have for the scalar QED. So that tells us that this operator decoupling mechanism is actually captured by the conformal bootstrap. But unfortunately, what we find is that the kink itself is not scalar QED. For example, if we compare the results with the larger NF expansion, there are a considerable discrepancy, which is around 3 over NF. And that tells us that the kink itself is not the scalar QED, which the case is also similar if we consider 2+ epsilon dimensions. We get a sharp kink, but it has considerable discrepancy from the 2+ epsilon expansion result. But it's still rather promising. One thing that we did is, now instead of bounding this decoupling operator, what we can do is that we just add a gap in this channel. For example, we demand that the operators, the lowest lying operators in this channel shall be larger than 2.5, for example. And then this will safely exclude all non-abelian gauge theories while keep the scalar QED intact. And under this assumption, we can try to bound other operators. And this is what we did in 2+ epsilon dimensions. We add a small gap in the decoupling operator for the decoupling operator. And now we say that the numerical bounds get significantly modified. And now we get a sharp kink. And so here we are bounding the SUN singlet. And we find that this kink just coincide with the 2+ epsilon expansions. So which is denoted as a green dot. So in contrast, if we don't add any gap in the decoupling operator, you will say that here we get a kink here, which is not the scalar QED. And also one important thing to emphasize is that the position of this kink is insensitive to the gap we added as long as it's larger than some value. So for example, here we compare two different values of gap in the decoupling operator channel, and the numerical bounds are almost identical to each other. And we can also further get an island for this scalar QED in 2+ epsilon dimensions. by imposing some extra gaps. And those gaps are physically motivated, but I don't have time to explain them. So the important information here is that by just calculate a single correlator, we are able to get an island where the scalar QED lives in. And this island also exists in if we scan other space, like we can try to bound a rank 4 tensor in of this theory, and then we also find a very nice island, and this island can be pushed to 3D if NF is large. And this is our results in 3D. You can see that for NF equal to 1,000 or 100, we get very nice island with the scalar QED lives in. But somehow this island is lost as NF goes to interesting situation like NF equals to 20 or smaller. And the reason that the island is lost, we believe it's related to the numerical convergence. And it's important to point out that here, all the calculations is done with a single correlator. Where we expect a numerical convergence won't be very good. And we expect that if we mix these two operators, we can further shrink the island to a very small region, and probably we can get island for small NF, and that will eventually solve the scalar QED numerically using the conformal bootstrap. Okay, let me just
ask a question.
Yeah.
Back then, I mean, don't we expect QED, the scalar QED to disappear below some unknown NF anyway?
Yeah.
So when you say the island disappears below, I don't know, 20 or something, why won't you say
that? It's a different, so here by disappear, I mean, it's just connected with the island, right? It doesn't mean we exclude it as a unitary SFT. It just means what I was trying to say is that we are not able to isolate it from to a small region.
I see.
Yeah.
I see, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so let me just wrap up. I first talk about several representative examples of critical quantum matter that includes deconfined phase transitions, Dirac spin liquid, and also this stable liquid. And all those can indeed be understood using a very unified framework. And we propose a recipe to bootstrap critical quantum matters described by gauge theories and Westrom-Norton theories. And we benchmark it with both the SU2 level K and the scalar QED. And for scalar QED, we have obtained its kink and islands. So in the future, we hope that to use a mixed correlator to eventually numerically solve the scalar QED and other gauge theories like the QED, and hopefully also for the stable liquid. I think the recipe we discovered should apply to all those, these two as well. And I think there's also an open question that I'm pretty curious, that is from the discussion, both numerically and also this gauge theory analysis, it seems that the 2D cosmodi, some properties of the 2D cosmodi algebra can be generalized to higher dimensions. So I'm curious that whether our numerical results, further numerical results can shed light to this interesting open question. Okay, thanks for your attention.
Thanks, Yingchen. Any other questions from the audience? I guess we've had quite a few during the talk.
I have a simple question.
Go ahead.
So can you elaborate on this idea of introducing mild gap? So what are you doing say operationally what I do?
So operationally, what we are doing is that we just declared that all the operators in certain channel should have a scaling dimension larger than some number.
Right? Oh, I see. So you I see.
Yeah, just like here, for example, here, so for this first operator, remember that for the scalar QED, the scaling dimension of this operator should be around 4, mm-hmm. while for the non-abelian gauge theory, the scaling dimension operator, a scaling dimension of this operator should be around 2. Mm-hmm. So then we can just declare that the operator, the lowest operator in this channel should be larger than 3. By doing this, then we can exclude all the non-abelian gauge theories.
Right?
Yeah, and I think it's crucial in all the bootstrap calculations, because if we don't impose anything, then many theories can be consistent with the crossing the crossing equations, right? Crossing symmetry. Then the idea of getting an island or even a kink for a certain theory is that we need to exclude all other theories that are consistent with this bootstrap equation. That's why we need to add gaps.
So does it mean that we sort of have to have some rough ideas about the solution to really?
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
Yeah. And I think that so practically it's useful, and conceptually that's probably is also useful, because that might give us a way to define a safety of interest. Right? Mm-hmm. It's I really think it's related to the null operators of the 2D safety, mm-hmm. right? And there we know that null operator is one of the most important thing that in 2D safety, right?
But the fact that you know, it's not sitting at the kink. So what does it really mean? It doesn't mean that actually there may be, many null operators, for example, some more than what you may expect from the scalar QED.
Oh, you mean here the scalar QED does not sit at
Yeah.
So that's again, it's related to again just that there are many. In principle, there can be many theories that are consistent with the bootstrap equation, right? So we need to exclude those theories to make the theory we are interested to appear in the bootstrap study.
Okay,
so here
just goes back to the same idea. Okay.
Yeah. And here it's possible that the theory sitting at the kink is some safety that we never thought of. That's mm-hmm. possible. Yeah. But that safety could be closely related to scalar QED. Yeah.
But in any case, according to what you describe, it represents some kind of discontinuity in the scaling dimension.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. And in 2D, we know this discontinuity is related to the non-operator physics. Yeah. And in high dimensions, there might be a similar notion, right? Although we don't know how to do it algebraically.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so Yin Chen, just one quick question. So is there some reason to believe, I know there's been some work by mathematicians on things like extensions of affine Lie algebras and more than loop algebras and more than 2D, but is there some reason to expect that there's some connection between conformal invariants and such algebras in more than two dimensions? Two dimensions of Sugawara and all this stuff, but.
Yeah, I have no idea. Frankly, I have no idea. The reason that for me to pose this question is first numerically, it seems that something carries over in higher dimension. Mm-hmm. And also, I think at least for the Kazemudi algebra, this null operator structure is closely related to the gauge theory. right? And for gauge theory, we can easily imagine for any dimension, we can have something simple. And based on those two, I'm posing these possibilities, but I have no idea about how to really make progress.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I don't really know anything about this, but these conformal bootstrap bounds that you can get, is this in any way related to like the work by Nima Arkani Hamed on this EFT hedron and amplitude hedron constraints? I don't know if you know the answer. I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea about that.
Oh, okay. It just seemed a little bit similar, but.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Any other question? Okay. If not, let's thank Yin Chen again for this nice talk today. And thanks everyone.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for a nice talk.